Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here it's Jonna Spilbor, it's Carol Pesci, it's this fella with the funny name, and we are back with another show, and another show that is going to feature yet another fantastic guest, because that is what we do. We feature fantastic guests. And today, we are going to talk to somebody who's going to tell us all about how to be a likable badass. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, she has to be a sister from another mister, considering I wrote Happy Bitch and this is Likeable Badass. We're kind of like on the same wavelength. But yeah, we definitely do love to bring smart people on because it raises, you know, the average IQ of our group here. But coming up after the break, we will be talking with Allison Fregail. She is the author of Likeable Badass, How Women Get the Success They Deserve. I am loving her book. She's super intelligent. She's a professor. And she's going to, among other things, talk to us about what the difference is between power and status. And how status is really what we're after. And she's going to explain the difference among many other things. Super intelligent. And I'm excited to talk with her.
Okay. Very cool.
Can I make an admission? until this morning, when you told us how exactly to pronounce Allison's last name, every time I looked at her last name, when I was doing my homework, I kept getting that, you know, is it from A Christmas Story? Fragile, you know, when
yes, that's
the major award shows up.
Yes, the major award. Yes, the French leg lamp.
Yeah, and that just kept going there, but it was fragile. But he was pronouncing fragile. I kept doing it.
Oh, we're almost time for that movie to be coming up. Believe it or not,
I know.
Yes, exactly. It is that time of year.
But maybe I was doing that because I'm sleep deprived majorly today.
Is this why you're showing up and your screen name today is Up Ship's Creek?
Yes, it is. Up Ship's Creek.
Now, is that because of something in the river that woke you up? Because, I mean, you are very close to the Hudson and some ships, or is that this is something different?
Well, first of all, you're very astute, Frankenberry, but I have a lot of things to complain about right now about this ship. So, yes. So you are correct. So I'll just briefly tell you the story, Frankenberry, because I did post a little video at 2 o'clock in the morning today because I was up. Because here's what happened. I'm sleeping like an angel, which rarely happens as it is.
Now, is that because you're not necessarily very angelic or just that you don't sleep well?
I don't sleep well.
Okay, gotcha.
Let me back up for a second, because before I went to bed, I was hearing a noise, a nonstop noise that didn't sound overly close, but it was close enough where I was hearing it. And when I was hearing it before I went to bed, there was nothing on the horizon. I could see no major equipment, but it sounded like a piece of major equipment, maybe like down the street. And I remember saying to myself, that's just an odd noise to be happening at, let's say it was maybe around 9 o'clock at night. That's an odd noise to be happening. And I couldn't identify where it was coming from, but I made a mental note of it. And that was that. Off to bed I go eventually. And everything was fine until 2 o'clock in the morning. I wake up and it literally sounds like I am in an airplane engine. Like, it is so loud. It's drowning out everything. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. I first check the driveway. Is there a big Mack truck in my driveway? I mean, these are the things going through my head. I can't identify from my bed. I can't quite identify what it is or where exactly it's coming from. But I did have a few windows open and it was loud. So I shut the windows and then I sort of pop up just to take a look into the backyard, where I do not think this noise is coming from, but I was Because sure enough, I pop up, I look outside, and I don't know if you guys remember or if our listeners will remember, maybe a couple of weeks ago, there was this giant carnival-looking barge that was floating south down the Hudson River, and the word on the street was it was some Canadian power company that was laying some sort of power lines or cables or something from Canada on way to New York City. That was the rumor. I did not verify that rumor. But I did not think that I was ever going to see that gigantic ship again. Well, sure enough, it shows up at 2 o'clock in the freaking morning.
Oh, no.
Right outside my door. And it's not moving, you guys. It wasn't like, let's move down. No. It was like parked. Honestly, parked. And like, what are the chances, right? Like, you know, I had to shake both hands to the heaven and said, is there no God? Like, it was just crazy. And then that got me thinking. So it was loud. It was bothersome. I took a video of it because I was wide awake now at 2 o'clock in the morning. But more importantly, I do want to look into what this ship is up to. Because anybody can report that it's a Canadian ship doing what it's doing. It has zero, there's no name on it. I don't even think I saw like a number on it. Like there's no way with the naked eye to identify who owns this thing or what it is actually doing.
So you can make a call and complain.
So I either will make a call or somebody needs to buy me a bullhorn. Because I would have been screaming through it at 2 o'clock in the morning at this ship.
Braless in her emoji slippers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Shorts.
That's right.
To the pleasure of all your neighbors. Yes.
Oh, yeah. And well, yeah, that would have got their attention. But really now, it's never happened. I have been in that house now for over 10 years. Nothing like this has ever happened before. I mean, barges come and go, but nothing like this. And I really want to know exactly who owns that ship and what they're doing and how often they're going to be doing it. Because it to me, it's as odd as a UFO. I'm not kidding. It's like a UFO. It just showed up. It's making all this noise. It doesn't move very fast.
Frankenberry.
It's kidnapping
unidentified
cows.
Unidentified floating objects.
There you go. All of a sudden you saw all the cows they kidnapped on the deck. Yeah, I know.
Maybe we'll have 2x2 animals. I don't know.
Well, I heard a similar explanation for what that big ship is. Now, where was it this morning? Did it move on its way?
So this morning after I got up 2 hours later, it was slightly north. I mean, still within my eyesight, but it had moved slightly north, maybe a football field's north of where it was at 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's a lot. Wow. That's a big exaggeration. It could be less than that. So it's a mystery. And there's got to be a way to really get a straight answer on what this thing is doing and why it's doing it and how long it's going to be doing it for. I think.
Well, I'm sure we can solve that mystery.
I was going to say, I mean, that would just, couldn't you even just call your local Hamburg police there and just ask them the question to start the process?
I mean, I think since it's on the waterway, I'd have to call somebody else.
Well, at least your police department could give you the direction on who to call. Well, I would imagine they still have to have a heads up as to what's going on. It's not like you would be the only person possibly complaining about the noise.
Here it is. The main purpose of the boat is to help lay hundreds of miles of underwater cable that will eventually transmit hydropower from Canada to New York City. I don't see a phone number for the captain in this article.
No?
Yeah, I don't know who to call about it, but that's what it is.
And that's another thing. Like, is there any environmental effect that's going to happen from these cables? Like, I didn't hear anything about this. You know, am I going to start glowing green from these hydro cables?
Laying a cable. Oh, yeah, you mean from when the hydropower?
Yeah.
I think you'll be fine, John. Though I got to tell you, I mean, I've seen some Star Trek episodes where Captain Kirk got involved with like a green alien, and they were always really cute. So I don't think you have to worry about that. I think that might, you know, that could be kind of cool, actually.
And not for nothing, does anybody else think it's weird that you've got to get your hydropower from New York City all the way up to Canada? Like, there's no other closer place for them to do that? Like, I am very
probably
skeptical.
Coming from Niagara Falls.
Well, then why are we laying cable? I mean, New York City's not getting the hydropower. I thought Canada was getting the hydropower.
No, I think it's the other way around. I think it's being generated in Canada and being brought to New York City.
Being brought to New York City, because New York City needs hydropower. I mean, come on.
Don't look at me. I couldn't
I am
tell you.
Looking at you.
I couldn't tell you one way or the
Why
other.
Why do you know she's looking at you?
I am.
She's too, but I'm sure.
So anyway, I am sleeping.
All right.
But then I
I'm
do
sorry.
Have. Thank you. I do have something kind of not funny, but I do have a little cat update. Can I just give you a little cat update?
We live for your cat.
Yes,
updates.
We do live for your cat updates, as I'm sure a good deal of the audience does as well.
Well, this isn't like I didn't rehome any of the cats yet. I know that would, I can't wait for that cat update. But I just want to say that Quinn, the murderous dirt cat, has reached a whole new level of murder. I'll tell you why, because I'm staring at a very sliced up hand, and here's what she did to me this morning. So this cat, as you know, I've recorded some of this. She's a murderous dirt cat in that she doesn't let me pet her, and if I come anywhere near her, she usually whacks me with a paw. She hisses at me. I've never pet her. I can't catch her to get her fixed. But when I am in the cat room, she will plop herself somewhere near my vicinity, lay there and stare at me. Just stare at me.
Right? It's so kind of funny.
This, which is so weird. And she tucks a little paw under and she stares at me. But if I go to touch her, she will kill me. So this morning I'm sitting there having coffee and she's tucked herself in and she's staring at me at this new cat pillow. And another cat comes by and that cat sits down, and this cat loves to be petted. So I'm stroking the cat number one while Quinn, the murderous dirt cat, is onlooking. And as I'm petting the other cat, Quinn whacked me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm petting a whole different cat. She had no business reaching out and touching me in any way. And she did and broke
boy.
The skin.
Ooh.
She's mental.
She was just protecting a pal. She saw you as a danger, and she thought her friend was possibly being seduced by the dark side, so she was standing up. That's all.
How long has Quinn been inside?
Oh, yes. Wow. Now that you mention that, she has been, she's 6 weeks shy of a year. I caught her.
Oh, no way. That long?
Yeah, I caught her.
And she's still like that?
Yes.
Oh, she's got issues.
She's totally got issues.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
You need to get that guy with the funky beard over to your house.
Yeah.
You know, I reached out to him to be a guest on our show. I'm going to do it again. You mean Jackson Galaxy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I always forget his name, but.
Yeah, because this cat really needs a cat shrink for sure. But go figure.
Yeah, and it certainly didn't take me that long to get Gray into my house, and Gray beat me up on a regular basis 2 years ago. I mean, you know the Grayson story, but didn't take me a year, and he wasn't in the house. It took me like maybe 5-6 months, but I eventually got him inside, and then he was sleeping on the bed with me. But
Frankie Barry, maybe you should move in with Jonna for a few months and tame Quinn.
Yeah,
and tame
Quinn, yes. I will have to at least come over and visit and get close enough in the cat room just to say hi.
She is such a hard, but now it's almost like a challenge. Now I'm saying to myself, I am going to do this, but it is taking a long, long time. I know. Whacking me for petting a different cat. Like, that takes some sort of cat nerve, really.
And so I thought you had somebody who was interested in taking Quinn and the number eight.
Yes, I have a family member.
Well, I thought your paralegal was interested.
Right. That's.
Oh.
And then we were discussing telling her that she needs to take two.
Well, that was just it. My paralegal was interested in taking one, but I said she can't take one. She has to take two. And then she was like, well, forget it then.
I thought you told us.
Why wouldn't you get rid of one?
I thought you said she was willing to take two.
No, but apparently not.
Well, look, if she's not, if she's at work and she's a single woman and she's at work all the time, it's better to have two so they have themselves for company.
Oh yeah, these cats definitely, especially since none of the cats that I have been holding captive have ever been alone.
Yeah,
they've not been alone. They've always had another cat or 12.
So, John, didn't you successfully give one away or no? Did that come back?
Well, I don't want to mention it. I did that. Yeah.
Was it Quinn?
No, that was Lincoln. And it turned out Lincoln had a heart issue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. We don't want to talk about that.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm just scarred for life. It's all right. Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you for opening that.
Thank you for opening wounds you weren't aware of.
Oh, yeah, that I wasn't aware of. Okay.
But I was going to say, and I thought you were going to say, that Quinn, the murderous dirt cat, is a real unlikable badass.
Okay. Oh. There you go. Oh. Easy enough done. Yes.
Unlikable, though.
Gotcha. We see what you did there.
Now we could turn that around. Yeah. Okay. Let's turn around.
Okay. That's it. That's all you
that's,
got.
That's it. That's good enough.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll work with that. Coming up after the break, we have Allison Fergale. Actually, either Fergale or Fergale. We'll find out soon enough. She is the author of a new book called Likeable Badass, How Women Get the Success They Deserve. She's going to be talking to us, among other things, what the difference is between power and status and which one you really want to focus on and can influence that will get you more of what you want in the workplace.
All right. That is who is up next. Allison Fergale or Fugazi or something. That's the only name I can say. That's what gets stuck in my head. I don't know why. But anyway, she is on the way. Segment number two, where we talk to our guest, is up next with Happy Hour. And Jonas Billboard and Carol Pesci and this guy. We'll be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour here. It's Jonas Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci. It is, I'm not going to say the Lord of Darkness because you don't know the story, so I just will cut this part out. And this fella with the funny name. And it's time now to get to our guest for today. And we are going to be talking with Allison Fergale. Is that correct, Allison? I pronounced that right?
You did.
Oh, good for me. Good for me. I'm going to chalk one up for me, and then I'm going to shut up.
Yes, I'm very excited to have with us today Allison Fergale. She is the author of the new book, Likeable Badass, Sister from Another Mister, as I'm the author of Happy Bitch. So we're right along the same lines there. And the subhead to her book, it's nice and short, Frankenberry. You know that. You like that. How Women Get the Success They Deserve. And so Allison is a research psychologist, award-winning professor, international keynote speaker, and of course, author. And she is on a mission to help others, especially women, use behavioral science to work and live better. Her scholarship has been published in the most prestigious academic journals in her field and featured in prominent media outlets such as the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Financial Times, Boston Globe, and Inc. She lives in Chicago with her husband and three children, who are all named after professional athletes. We will give her a chance to tell us those names in a moment. And she likes cheap coffee, which I can't really relate with, but she does like not so cheap wine. So she's got Jonna and I there. Yep. Jonna, she also likes fabulous shoes. So she's your sister from another mister, and a big Peloton fan. So I got her there. So Allison, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. And before we get into the content, what are your kids' names?
Okay, so here's the deal. My husband, born and raised in Chicago, where I now live. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. We are both sports fans. We came up with this plan years before we had kids. But I have three kids. They all have Chicago professional athlete first names, and they all have Pittsburgh middle names, in particular Pittsburgh Steelers.
So that's awesome.
Now, and Allison, I'll tell you before you get to the names that my family is from Pittsburgh, and I lived in Pittsburgh for many, many years and worked in radio there, actually, for a very long time. So I am a Pittsburgh sports fan, so I'm looking forward to hearing these middle names.
Okay, and amazingly, in our little Zoom photos here, I think I spy a Pirates hat in your photo.
You do, though. Yeah. I'm not as much a baseball fan these days, but that's all Rob Manfred's fault, not the Pirates.
Totally. Okay, so the answer is I have a Jordan Bradshaw. So Michael nice. Jordan and Terry Bradshaw. I have a Peyton Harris for Walter Payton and Franco Harris. And then those are boys. And then I have a daughter whose name is Maddox Green. We call her Maddie. But Maddox is for Greg Maddox of the Cubs / Braves fame and Mean Joe Green.
Oh, very nice. That's very awesome. Nicely done.
That's so fun.
Love it.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get into the content of your book, Likeable Badass. The first question I always love asking our author guests is, what's the backstory, Allison? What made you want to write this book? What was important about it? What did you want to achieve by writing this?
Absolutely. More than anything, I wanted to write a book for women to educate and empower women using behavioral science. And I have been a professor for a really long time. Most of the people in my audiences have traditionally been men, but I found that it was always the women who would come up to me after a class or a program and say, hey, I'm struggling with something. Can you help me? And I started one-on-one giving women behavioral science that I knew about in my field to say, hey, I found this helpful. It might help you too. So really the backstory was that I became an advocate for women and an educator for women out of those individual conversations where I realized women had problems and questions that they weren't getting answers to elsewhere, and I could help. And Likeable Badass, which we can talk about, that title kind of, I always knew when I wrote about this topic, it would be called Likeable Badass. It's my catchy term for how people get respect. And in the book, I unpack how important respect is for our quality of life, why women feel like they don't get as much respect as they should, and how that's very fixable.
I love it. One of the big points that you make in your book, and I think it's the key distinction, it's the foundation for everything else that you talk about, is the difference between power and status and why status is more important. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So power is you control stuff that people value. So if you control the budget, you know, or you control the ability to hire and fire or give somebody a good review or a bad review. If you have a teenager and you hold the car keys, right, that's a valued resource. So power is controlling resources that matter. And that is something that is very important to all of us in life, including women. Status is being respected by other people. That's also very important. And those two things are, again, they matter greatly, but they are distinct. So you could have a lot of control, but not have a lot of respect, have a lot of respect, but not have a lot of control. And traditionally, we spend a lot of time when it comes to women helping them try to get more power, myself included, meaning when you negotiate for a raise, when you negotiate for a promotion, when you pursue those things, one of the benefits is that you will get more power. You will control more resources, which is important. But the unspoken piece, which I knew about, was that without respect, resources are pretty hard to negotiate for. If you're talking to people and they're looking at you and they're thinking in their head, I don't really value you. I don't really respect you. There are very few techniques or strategies that you could use to get people to give you the resources you want. And so although they're both important, our emphasis in helping women try to get more power and our lack of discussion about what is this status thing and how do you get more of it is keeping us from being as effective as we can. So I'm trying to shine an overdue spotlight on status to say, hey, this thing that you know that's annoying when you aren't respected, it has a name and you can influence it. And if you influence it, it's going to make all those other forms of power that you also deserve a lot easier for you to get.
So, Allison, this is Jonna, and forgive me because I'm very, very sleep deprived today. So I may ask questions that are more stupid than I normally ask in these interviews. What you're saying makes total sense. But what came to mind is this a chicken egg argument, right? Like if you have more power, then do you automatically get the status? Or if you have more status, you automatically get the power? Or is that way off?
No, it's not off, but it's not exactly chicken and egg in the sense that we can't figure out which one came first. It's definitely the case that status helps you get power. If you are respected, people are much more interested in giving you resources. The opposite one, if you control stuff, do people automatically respect you? Sometimes, mm-hmm. but not as much. And that's where one of the areas I've done some research is I call it low status power holders, people who are in control, but people don't really respect them. Maybe maybe it's because of their title. You know, maybe you work in human resources or procurement and you're a gatekeeper and people can't get things they want unless they go through you. You might be in that situation. Or maybe you're in that situation because of your gender or some other characteristic where you have a lot of power, but you haven't been well respected. And so in that those cases, just because you control stuff doesn't mean people respect you. And what we see is that that's a really miserable existence for people. Being a low status power holder is terrible. People treat people terribly. And as a result, people often flee their environments if they're in those situations. So it's status leads to power more than power leads to status, which is why if we chase power and we're ignorant of what this whole status thing is, then our results aren't as good. But if we start doing the status piece first, power piece starts to fall into place.
So really, people on either side of that spectrum will benefit from your book. If you're somebody who wants to gain more respect and power, you focus on the status. If you're someone who's in a position of power who doesn't feel respected, you can also learn how to gain more status in your position of power, right?
Absolutely. And then I would hope there's also readers who say, I already have both, right? I've arrived. I do feel well respected and I do have power. And I also talk about in the book, what are you going to use those resources for? Status and power are resources, not just to make your life better, but to make other people's lives better. So how do you use your status to stand up for things you believe in, make, you know, your world or a community a better place? How do you use your status and power to mentor other people so that they can replicate what you do and someday they can be where you are? So at any stage of your journey, you can think about how to bring your attention to power and status for your benefit and for the benefit of other people.
So if someone's listening right now and wants to feel more respected, raise their status in the workplace, and maybe power isn't their number one factor, but that will may naturally come along with it. What is something they can actively do to gain, to increase their status in the workplace? And does this tie into what you say about it's bad advice when your mother tells you don't worry about what other people think of you? Does that tie into that?
Totally. Okay. So what can we do to raise our status? The reason the book is called Likeable Badass is not just because it's catchy. It's because it references the two dimensions that get you status. People respect you when they think you care about people other than yourself. In psychology, we call that warmth, but on the book, I call it likable. But this idea that you're not just about you, you do good things and you care about other people. The second thing they respect is they can trust you, rely on you. You're good at what you do. You're capable, competent, decisive, organized. You're not flaky. That's the badass piece. In psychology, we often call it assertiveness or competence. But the idea is when you can show up to your audience and convince other people's brains that you care about them and you're good at what you do, you have done what you can do to get them to respect you. So it's simple things like if you have the best way to build status is to do something big or small that allows you to use your unique talents for someone else's benefit. And both of those things are important. Your unique talents. I always say buying someone coffee when you meet for a conversation is nice, but it's nothing. There's no unique talent, right? Anyone could in the line could buy the coffee too. But what if instead of just buying the coffee or instead of buying the coffee, when you met somebody and you listened to them and you asked them questions and you learned their story, you were able to say, you know what? I know somebody you would really like to meet. Like maybe I know the next person you would like to interview, or I know somebody who's going to be a great person to talk to for your next book, whatever it is. And I made that introduction. Now, with no more effort than buying the coffee, I've done something that allows me to show up as caring because I made an introduction to help you. And it also shows me as capable because why? Because I have a good network. I know somebody you don't know. So now I'm actually uniquely useful. So that's what I help people think about is that unique capability to add value to someone else. And I have another good example. I won't tell you it unless you tell me to tell you because I don't want to run on too long, but I just had
tell
something
me.
Happen. Okay. Okay. It's slightly more work, but not much. So I meet a woman who's clearly very active and very good at Instagram. And I'm at an event and she's documenting all the stuff on social. And she asked me a question. She said, she's in a corporate workplace. She said, and I'm guessing just by looking at her, she's certainly younger than me and maybe on the young side for her workplace. She says, I really care about social media. I spend time on it, but I know that my older colleagues, often male, they think it's frivolous. I want to be taken seriously as a professional. At the same time, I don't want to abandon something that is authentic to who I am. What do I do? And I said, well, you're clearly good at Instagram. I've just been watching you. Have you ever used your skills to help them? She said, no, what do you mean? I said, well, if you're just documenting your spring break or your breakfast or even this event, that's not really that useful to me. But I am on social media, but I'm too old. I didn't grow up with it. So I don't feel particularly good at it, even though I know I need to do it. What if you offered to your older colleagues, could I do some posts for the company social page? I could help you refine your profile, or I could take a video of you the next time you're presenting and cut it up for you and give you a clip for your social, something like that. Would that be useful? As soon as you take something you're good at and you use it for someone else's benefit, you're combining that likable and badass together. And I said, sure, when it's only for your benefit, then you don't really get as much credit, but you start with what you love and think about how you can make someone else's life better with it.
This is simultaneously brilliant and basic at the same time.
This is my point. Oftentimes the difference between being really well respected and not is not the underlying talent, skills, efforts you put in. That's the saddest and most amazing part, right? Which is that the difference is sometimes just the small moment of, oh, you already did that thing anyway. Now with 5 more minutes of effort, you can then change how someone sees you, because status is nothing but perception. And that's both good and bad, right? It's bad because we don't get to 100% control what other people think, but we can influence it greatly, which is why I said that our parents telling us don't worry what other people think ends up being terrible life advice, because I only say this to my kids and people only say it when someone's upset, when they're not getting the results you want. I say, no one ever tells you not to care what other people think when you're accepting an award. Like, they only say it. When you're upset, because they don't want you to hurt, right? And so they tell you in those moments, if you just don't pay attention to those people, you won't hurt so bad. And that's very sweet, but it's just not the way the world works. So much of our life satisfaction is about what other people think. Like, you can't, you know, you can't get into college or get a date or get married or get a promotion or do anything if you can't convince other people that they should be in your orbit. You know, you have to, our lives go through other people. So this idea that because we can't perfectly control it does mean that we will sometimes get really annoying outcomes, but we shouldn't ever give up on trying to influence our audience. So not sitting in your room crying or being obsessed or ruminating, but to say, I can influence a lot, not perfectly, but I can influence a lot of how other people see me. And the more I have the mindset of influencing, the more rewards will come to me.
This is really fascinating because I'm running through my own meter. Like, so I own a business and I have employees, right? And I'm trying to say to myself, or I am saying to myself, how come sometimes I see their faces light up when I tell them they're doing a good job, or when I make some sort of, it doesn't even have to be big, just acknowledge a job well done in even the smallest of ways. And I sense that their faces light up. And then sometimes I could give them a financial bonus and they're like, eh, another bonus. Next. And I've always said to myself, what the f- is that about? Like, I don't understand that. And I'm trying to figure out if there's a connection between what you're describing and what I'm observing.
Yeah, it could be a couple of different things. I mean, it could be individuals value different things, right? Mm-hmm. So what, when you say I'm using my unique contributions to benefit you, what everyone considers beneficial could be different. So some people might like the praise, some people might like the financial reward, like that stuff can differ. But I think in terms of trying to figure out your audience, one of the best ways, whether it's, you know, should I give you a bonus or should I give you praise or should I do both or whatever it is, or whether it's thinking about what they respect, is to show up with genuine curiosity about their life and just ask them a lot of questions. I always say everybody is their own favorite subject of conversation. So people will tell you anything you want to know if they think you're actually curious about the answer. So sometimes rather than guessing what people value, whether it's in a managerial context or whether it's just, you know, building a peer relationship, is to start to talk to them about what they value and listen to the answers and start to figure out, okay, now I understand why. So for example, you know, maybe it's not that I don't care about the money, but if I feel like everyone's getting the money or you were obligated to get me the money, then it doesn't really feel like I'm unique and special in some way, right? That you're really showing me how much you value me if everyone gets the same thing. But is the praise public? And so then other people got to see how well I was doing and I could build my status with them as well. So you, as you start to like unpack it and pay attention, but I don't think it's wrong to ask them and say, hey, like, this is clearly really meaningful to you, especially when you do something when their eyes light up. Be like, I can sense that you really valued that and I want to be doing more things that you value. Tell me why, you know, tell me why that resonated well, and what can you teach me about how to manage you and how to manage everyone else effectively? And people love to talk about that stuff if you tell them, if they think you care.
Wow. That's with $1 million right there.
And I'll take half. You can just send me half.
She lowered her voice because she put her head down and is taking notes right now, I promise. So Allison, if somebody is not necessarily looking for power, but they want, what are the other benefits of focusing on raising your status at work and at home? Why does it matter? What other reasons would people want to learn how to do this better?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, status is one of a few what psychologists call fundamental human needs, things that all human beings want to some level, and they make life a lot better. So if we look at the research, when people are not feeling respected, their physical health suffers, they don't live as long, their reproductive health suffers, their mental health suffers. So not being respected, I always say, is as psychologically damaging as living a life without friends. So pursuing status, even for kind of status sake, can be valuable because it feels better. You may not have had the word until you listen to this, but when you have a moment where you feel like someone doesn't value you or respect you, whether that's a person at the DMV or the colleague you're working with, you come home in a bad mood. It doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And so when we can start to live a world where people value us, like we give them advice, they listen, you know, they're excited to see us, it makes life better. So that's one reason to pursue it, is it's just part and parcel of a happy life. But also, it's a resource. So as I said, you being well-respected doesn't just benefit you. It allows you to fight for things you care about and other people will listen. You can't be influential if you're not respected by your audience. So it's the basis, a prerequisite for influence. And so I guarantee you there's something you care about in this world, right? Whether it's something in your own life or something in, you know, in other people's lives, status is going to give you the resources you need to be able to influence that effectively.
Allison, I need to tell you a quick story about a very good friend of ours who is the epitome of the title of your book and all of these philosophies that you're sharing with us. Her name is Amy, and she started out as an employee at the U.S. Mint at the age of 18 as a janitor. And she became a natural leader who had status, who was respected. People followed her regardless of what her title was or what resources she had power over. She fought for the rights of her coworkers, despite being in a very, very harassment-oriented environment. It was bad. Mm-hmm. And she subsequently, in the last few years, took a transfer to another place that is within the federal government and is now advising generals on how to coach people, handle human resource issues. And this year, I get goosebumps talking about it, was awarded the Army's Stalwart Award, which is super rare, takes a lot of work at everything. And so I guess I'm kind of giving a story that supports her answer to my question about what is the benefit. She just does it naturally, but she is using her unique talents, constantly looking for ways to add value and improve the lives of others. And she is on freaking fire. And last year, luckily we got invited to, she had Gary Vaynerchuk come speak at her organization. The connection she's making, and she's making their lives better using her own unique skills. And then the connections they're connecting her with, she is a shining example of the success and satisfaction that comes by following your advice.
That's amazing. So first, offline, you should send me her address and I'll send her a book and some swag and tell her that the world needs more likable badasses like her. But also, the other part of your story, right? This is the beautiful part about status, is it doesn't require a certain title or age. Anybody at any level can contribute value to somebody else's life, starting out when you're brand new in your career. And that's often a time when people feel really powerless and vulnerable, but it's this magic opportunity where no one knows about you. No one cares about you. You can become anything. You can shape how people see you from the very, very beginning before you have any of that baggage of, you know, coworkers from prior jobs, knowing who you were and all that stuff. You can shape it. And so thinking from the moment, like I think a lot of people, they talk themselves out of contributing because they think they have nothing to add. And it's just so not true. I just got introduced to an amazing woman. But the way I met her was through my 15-year-old son, who went to an academic program, and she was the leadership speaker. And he texted me and said, "Mom, I think this speaker does what you do. Can I introduce you?" And I said, "Sure." And then he wrote my name down on a piece of paper and my email, and he gave it to her. And after the next session, he said, I want you to talk to my mom. And she laughed. She told me later, at first she thought she was in trouble because a teenager was saying, "I need you to call my mom." And then she realized she wasn't. And she said, "Never in a million years has a teenage boy told me I should talk to their mom, but I think I should just lean into this and do it." And when we met, we had all these points of connection. She just texted me yesterday, like, "I'm going to go on her podcast. I'm introducing her to other people." We both serve women. And I point out every time I tell that story, that connection was made by a 15-year-old boy who, I love him dearly, he has very few marketable skills. And if he can look for an opportunity to say, "Hey, you two might benefit from each other. I can make that." At 15, if you can do that, by the time you're 18, 21, 25, you have tons of value you can contribute to the world. You just have to have the mentality of looking for it. And it sounds like that's what she did so brilliantly from such a young age.
She's amazing. And I will connect the two of you. I know, Allison, I am loving talking with you. I could have you here all day. I know we can't do that. If I could ask you one more question, and then we'll make sure people know how they can follow you, buy your book. What is one piece of negotiation advice that can help someone, whether they are at work or at home with family, unless we've already covered that?
One of the things I say to people is move first. There's definitely a belief that the person who speaks first loses, and you should sit back and hear what the other person has to say. And the negotiation science does not support that. You get better results when you tell people what you want first. Will you get all of it? Probably not, but you'll get more of it for going first, because you will shape the idea of a good outcome in their mind. And I tell, you know, I this works from anything to, I was talking to like teenagers who are talking about sometimes not liking the social choices that their peers make, but wanting to go along with the crowd. And I said, if you don't like the plans your friends are making, then suggest new plans. Don't wait for them to say, "We're all going to do this," and then say, "No, I don't want to do that." That puts you in an awkward position. If you want, you know, to divide household chores in a particular way with your spouse, then say, "How about this way?" If at work you have an idea for how we should pursue this project, or which of these different options we're considering for a new venture is the best, put it out there first. So that's one that gives people a tremendous benefit, that their instinct often tells them the opposite. But simply by putting your idea out there first, you end up getting more of what you want. Because again, people do want to make you happy. They won't necessarily give you everything you're asking for, but they're more likely to bend to you if your idea anchors the conversation.
Perfect. Thank you so much. We're wrapping up here with Allison Forgill. She is the author of Likeable Badass, How Women Get the Success They Deserve. How can people learn more about you, follow you, listen to your wisdom, buy your book?
The best place I'd send you is to poke around my website. It's allisonforgale.com. And when you get there, you can see my book. You can order it. You can also click buttons to connect with me on social media. I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on Instagram, and I'm pretty active there. And then I also have a newsletter. It's called The Upper Hand. It's behavioral advice, behavioral science to help women excel. I publish it through Substack. It is free. And so those LinkedIn, Instagram, Upper Hand, good ways to stay connected with me, and all links available from my website in addition to info about the book.
Fantastic. Allison Forgill, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, to share your wisdom with the rest of us through your work, through your book, and through taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure.
Yes, Allison, it was very nice to meet you. Very nice talking to you. And I just wanted to let you know, by the way, something you said earlier. I, by the way, can cry and ruminate in my room very well, mind you, just to let you know.
Everyone has a zone of genius.
That's right. We all got skills. They might not be something we're all very proud of, but a skill is a skill. So anyway, we've got more for Happy Hour still to come with Jonna Spilborn, Carol Pesci. Thanks again so much to Allison Forgale, for joining us today. And segment number 3 is on the way, so please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time again to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frankenberry.
Well, it was nice to talk to Allison Fregale earlier just now, and it was a very interesting conversation. And like you said, Carol, very, very well spoken, and she definitely made some valuable points for the audience.
Yeah, I love when smart people can take topics that are big, that can really have a big impact on our lives, and present it to us in a way that says, okay, I understand that, I can grasp that, and now I'm clear on some things I can do about it. Just brilliant.
But the thing with her, like, this is such a big topic, and she was very, very compelling. Like, we could have done 3 hours.
Yes.
Yes, it could have gone on longer, certainly.
And I find that with, you know, a lot of our guests, which is why I think we should, you know what, when we book them the first time and we love what they're talking about, we should schedule their second follow-up like immediately, even if it's a few months from now, because there's just so much more here. She was great.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And I think no matter what you do for, I think we can all, man or woman, whether at home, whether you even work in a career, there's something to be gained from her wisdom to how really elevate your status. We all want to feel respected. She's right in that. And gaining respect elevates our entire life experience, our relationships, everything.
And I never thought about it from that way. Because, I mean, one thing I did have running through my mind is, like, take, and I'm not playing like devil's advocate here, but take Kim Kardashian, right? And any other big influencer, say, on social media. I don't know what she does to elevate her status or to make people feel good about themselves, or, you know, the other things that it takes to have the status, but she managed. But in real life, I think you can kind of figure out what you need to do to make people feel good about themselves and hence elevate your status. Some people just do it, you know. Social media influencers are, I don't know, unicorns, I guess, in some respect. Because she literally, Kim Kardashian did nothing. Except she did
have. She's famous for being famous, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but so I guess she's maybe, you know, there are some one-offs in everything. But I really liked what Allison had to say. For real people.
Yes, exactly.
For real
exactly.
people. For people who aren't Kardashians. Yeah, right. And the fundamental piece of advice there was, if you want to have more respect, more status, which will lead to more power, more resources in your life, it is about looking for ways to add value to the lives of other people, and not simply adding value to the lives of other people, but using your unique connections or talents or skills to do that. That's the key. And having that mentality to look for that opportunity.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the most important aspect of it there, is having that mentality to actually to take that next step and say, oh, wait a minute, what can I do right now to take that next step forward? And how can I help this person?
Yep.
So yep. I'm sure that's not something that a lot of people think of. They just they're just sitting down, like Allison said, with that cup of coffee that they bought for them, and they're thinking that's enough.
Right.
So, but anyway, Allison Fregale, thank you so much for joining us today, and for John, what the hell was that sound?
I said drug Chile.
a major award. But for Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry, and we'll be back again next week, same time, right here. So please join us again then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.